Okay, we're going to open the Schools Advisory Committee for Thursday, April the 22nd, 2021. And what we will do to start with is we're going to go around and introduce ourselves and so that we know who's on and who you represent before we get started with the other things. All right? And I'm not sure quite how to do that, Jenna. Who should go first? So, do we have a schedule or something?
Yeah, I can go down the list that I see.
Okay, great.
Would you like to start off, Chair?
Oh, okay. Introduce myself. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm Eileen Wiring O'Brien. I'm the Clark County Council Chair. And happy to be here today to talk with all of you.
And Councillor Olson?
Good morning. Julie Olson, Clark County Council District 2, and a little bit of prior love for my time on the Ridgefield School Board. So happy to be here this morning as well.
Thanks. All right. Brett Blechschmidt.
Hi, I'm Brett Blechschmidt. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Vancouver Public Schools.
Thank you. Brian Schlottman.
Good morning. I'm Brian. I'm a program manager with the School Health and Safety Program with Public Health.
Thank you. Bridget McLemon.
Hi, I'm Bridget McLemon. I'm here representing, along with Isla, the Clark County Neighborhood Association. We're working out who will be the representative to this group. So good to be here. Thank you.
Thanks. And Dan Young.
Hi, I'm Dan Young. I'm the Director of Community Development and the Fire Marshal for Clark County.
Denny Waters.
Hi, good morning. Denny Waters, Deputy Superintendent and incoming Superintendent for Battleground School District.
Isla Stanek.
Isla Stanek, President, West Hazeldale Neighborhood Association and Representative for NAC.
Jackie Camp.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jackie Camp. I'm with Clark County Community Planning. I'm here today to talk to you about our housing options study and action plan project.
Thank you. And Jason McEthren.
Yeah, hello, I'm Jason McEthren. I'm with Camas School District. I'm the Director of Business Services.
Thank you. Jose Alvarez.
Good morning. I'm Jose Alvarez. I'm here to talk to you about with Clark County Community Planning, and I'm here to talk to you about the Buildable Lands project.
Thank you. And Christine Grindy. Christine, if you're speaking, I can't hear you. Okay, I'm going to come back to Christine. Kyle Sproul. I'm not hearing you at the moment either. Okay, can you come back as well? Mark Ross.
Hi, I'm Mark Ross, soon to be retired superintendent of the Battleground School District. Yahoo.
Thank you. Matt Herman.
Good morning. My name is Matt Herman. I'm a transportation planner with Clark County Public Works. I'll be presenting later.
Thank you. Melissa Curtis.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Curtis. I'm a land use planner for Clark County, and I am the primary contact person for the school district.
Thank you. Mike Merlino.
Hi, Mike Merlino, Superintendent Evergreen School District.
Thank you. Mike Nerland. I am not hearing you at the moment, Mike. I'm not sure why. You look unmuted. I'm going to circle back to you in a minute as well. All right. Monica Santos-Panacho.
Hi, good morning, all. Monica Santos-Panacho here with the Columbia River Economic Development Council.
All right, thank you. Nathan McCann.
Good morning, everyone. Nathan McCann, Superintendent in Ridgefield.
Thank you. Oliver or Jaco?
Good morning, everyone. Oliver Jaco, Community Planning Director.
Thank you. Susan Ellinger?
Good morning. Susan Ellinger. I'm here. I'm the Land Use Review Manager for Community Development, and I'm here to talk to you about recent residential projects and the schools team.
Wonderful. Thank you. I've got a few people I've got to move over. All right, Connie Hennessy.
Hi, I'm Connie Hennessy, representing the Camas School District as a board member.
And Kevin Jolma.
This is Kevin Jolma, Director of Facilities, Battleground School District.
And Lester Brown.
This is Les Brown. I'm the Director of Communications and Technology with the Washougal School District.
And Sharon Cruz.
Hi, I'm Sharon Cruz with Washington State University, Vancouver College of Education.
Christine Grindy, can we just try you again and see if we can hear you?
Yep, I'm Chris Grindy with Washougal School District, and I'm the Business Services Director.
Wonderful, thanks. And Kyle Sproul.
Hi there, this is Kyle Sproul with Vancouver Public School Board of Directors.
Wonderful, thank you. And then let's see, Mike Nerland, let's just see if we can hear you.
How about now?
Can you hear me now? We can hear you. Yes, thank you.
Mike Nerland, Assistant Superintendent for Teaching and Learning at ESD 112.
Okay, wonderful. I think I got everyone. If I missed someone, please feel free to chime in now to introduce yourself.
Tyson Vogler, Superintendent at Green Mountain School District.
Oh, thank you, Tyson, and you were the first one on. All right. Okay, anyone else?
Dave Holmes. Superintendent, La Center School District.
Welcome. Anybody else? Okay. I think that's everyone.
Okay, thank you all and welcome. what we'll do next is we will have the review and adopt the meeting notes from October 2019. Do you all have those? And if so, I would entertain a motion to adopt them.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to approve the meeting notes from October 22nd, 2019. All in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Without objection, thank you. Meeting notes are adopted. Next, we're going to review the topics of our agenda today. We're going to look at the community development update. That will be by Dan Young, Susan Ellinger, and then we'll look at long range planning update from Jose, Jackie, Jenna, Matt Herman, et cetera. And then we'll have other issues if there are announcements and questions, and then wrap up. So I'm going to assume that that is an acceptable agenda. If not, I would hear from anybody who would like to have something else added. Hearing and seeing none, I will move on then to Dan Young and his group for community development update. Thank you.
Just give us one moment. Susan is going to share her screen. Let's see. All right, Susan, I think you should be able to share now.
Okay. Sorry, that is the wrong thing. There we go. Can you see the map now? Yeah. Okay, great. Again, I'm Susan Ellinger. I'm the land use review manager for the county. And I worked with our GIS department to create this map. This is residential projects in all of the districts in the last since the last meeting in 2019. And so I'll just go through this, but a link to this map will be available on the community planning webpage. And so if anybody wants to access that, and then if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those. So just a quick review. We'll start with Battleground. Battleground, we processed 64 applications and for a total of 2,035 units. So they had quite a bit of activity. Camas, we had 6 applications and for a total of 19 units. And just this includes subdivisions, it includes multifamily apartment projects, it includes accessory dwelling units, so projects of all different sizes. Looking at Evergreen. Evergreen had 18 applications for 150 lots. I'm sorry, one other thing. There's 2 different types of projects shown. The red dots are projects that have gone through just the preliminary process, and green dots have progressed on to the final process, meaning they're closer to being constructed or the lots being recorded. Just gives you an idea of kind of where they are in the process and how soon people may be living in those units. Moving on to Hawkinson. Hawkinson, we had 9 applications for a total of 278 units. Center. Five applications and 10 units. Ridgefield, we had 13 applications and 836 units.
Susan, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Could you repeat that again? The Ridgefield?
Ridgefield, 13 applications and 836 units.
Thank you.
Sure. Here we have Vancouver. We had 47 applications and 1,308 units. And Washougal. We had 3 applications and 8 units. So that's a really quick rundown. Like I said, I invite everybody to look at this after the meeting and let me know if you have any questions. Like I said, I worked with GIS right now. I had to run some reports and kind of change the formatting of those to get them in a format that would work for this. I know this is information that people are interested in, and so I am working with GIS to see what we can do in the future to provide more information to you. So is there any questions about any of that?
Susan, could I ask you real quick to go to the battleground, since we were the first that went kind of quick for me?
Absolutely.
You said 64 units and 2,034 or 64 applications.
65.
Yes. Yeah, Susan, I have a question after your answer.
Okay. Yeah. So I believe it was, I had 64. I might have done Excel the math a little bit incorrectly, but yeah, 2,035 units.
And a unit is a single house or?
Correct.
Sure. Okay. Is a unit, could a unit be one apartment building or is like a whole building or?
No, I included not an apartment. All of the units within the apartment are shown. So if it's okay. It's a 150 unit apartment complex that includes the 150 units.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. My question, just that is clear, these are applications that are in areas where the county has land use jurisdiction. It doesn't include applications within the city limits, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good point to make.
Are there other questions or clarification that you need to ask, Susan? Battleground was 64 or 65, whichever one it is, but with 2,035 units, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Yeah, Tyson Boulder at Green Mountain. I thought in that period we had some new housing starts in the Green Mountain District. Were they just left off or were there?
Well, I can look into that. I'll just have to look. It's possible. So the report came from our preliminary or from our LMS, our tracking system, and it's certainly possible that one project or two was left off. Clearly, we wouldn't want that to happen. So let me look and I can get back to you.
And I apologize if that happened.
And just to confirm, these are approved applications?
So there are applications in really any part of the process from preliminary review through our final review.
And Susan, could you also just give a heads up about if it's in the preliminary review, how far out would it actually house individuals? Can you give any kind of an idea about that time-wise?
That's really a hard question to answer because it depends a lot on the applicant and owner and when they come in for final review. Preliminary reviews are good for 7 years, and so they can come in immediately. And I have to be honest, it would generally appear to me that projects are coming in quite quickly from prelim to final. They're moving pretty fast these days. But they could come in anytime in that 7 years. And so from the very beginning of prelim until final, and when they can then apply for building permits, I would say an average is probably anywhere from, and I didn't put numbers together, so this is just an educated guess really, but 9 months to 2 years, depending on the specific information and situation for that project. But that's just kind of a real ballpark figure.
Okay, so would it be helpful, or is Dan going to present really the number of, for instance, building permits? That might be a more accurate count. I understand that if people are applying and have preliminary applications, that's one thing, but if it's 2 or 3 or 4 years down the road, it's not super helpful for planning. I mean, it helps, but if we knew the number of building permits, it might be more solid information for the school districts.
So we don't have that for you today, but it's certainly something that we could work on and present in the future, or get back to you with that information.
It may be helpful, I think, to the school districts. I mean, anybody can chime in, but it might be helpful to actually have those numbers and forward them to these various school districts so that there's a more, whether they're multifamily, how many possibly could be affecting these districts and enrollment, et cetera. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions of Susan? I don't hear any. So are we going to hear from you, Dan, or?
I will get, I did not know how you wanted that, but on the building permits, I can get you how many we've issued for like last year, how many we've issued for the first quarter of this year, that type of thing. Going forward for the rest of the year, I you know, that's a crystal ball that I don't have. But I can get those numbers, and I can break them down by single family residences versus multifamily residences.
That'd be great, Dan. I think that will be helpful. Even that information should be very helpful. So thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll get that for you. One thing I did want to talk about today is the processes that we are going through with the schools and the new schools, because there's a lot of them going on. offer the staff to meet with the school district at the beginning of the process and anytime they want during it. And a lot of times we're meeting just to make sure we're on track and what they need to do to get like temporary occupancy of the schools and all that. We're staying in constant communication with that. So that way the school districts are aware of what they need to do to get where they need to be. You know, like when we get near the end of the project, what do we need to do for a temporary? When can we start moving staff in then versus with students? And I think that's been going very well. And if people have any type of questions on that, they know that they can reach out to me or my team on that. We are definitely in communication, you know, as the fire marshal, especially I'm in communication with the building department every step of the way to make sure that these projects that we're not doing anything that's going to hold them up. So if you have any questions on that, please let me know. Or if there's somebody we're missing that hasn't taken advantage of that, please let us know. So anyway, that's what we're going to be talking about today. So does anybody have any questions for me? At least on that. One of the things I did want to talk about, and Susan can chime in too a little bit, we have now implemented concurrent review for projects. So if you're in doing your final site plan and final engineering, we will do concurrent building reviews at that time. There are some caveats with that, such as we cannot issue a building permit until all the final engineering, final land use is complete. But we can be doing concurrent reviews, so that way it's going to eliminate some of the time lag. And we just started that. We're doing a 6-month trial, and at the end of the 6 months, we'll get together with Deeb and the builders and others if they want to be involved to see where we need to improve. But that has just recently started. I'll let Susan talk about the concurrent engineering and concurrent site plan right now. So, Susan.
Yeah, so we recently worked with Deeb Development and Engineering Advisory Board in a subcommittee, and we're making several process improvements to the preliminary process, which is basically the first step in the development process. And that committee is still ongoing, but some of the things that we're working on are improvements to the pre-application conference process and our reports. Really the biggest change is that we're combining the final site plan and final engineering process. That in the past has been two separate processes. A few years ago, we started having people submit both of those cases at the same time. And now we're going to go to just one submittal, make it one single process. Everything will be routed together to all the reviewers. And I think it works better for us internally, but also externally. You only have one submittal package. And that is going to start on May 1st. We also worked on and are still working on consolidating some of our application forms. So we're going to have one application form for the preliminary process. Previously, we had different forms for prelim, for land use, for development engineering, and for wetland habitat, which could be cumbersome and wasn't really necessary. And so we're working on combining all of those. We also updated our submittal items, the required submittal items, and reduced that list some. And in some instances, we're also allowing uploading of zip files instead of individual files, which actually saves the consulting teams quite a bit of time in uploading those files. So we're, I would consider these a lot of these kind of tweaks, but we're looking at and trying to improve the preliminary process. So if anybody has any questions about that, I'm happy to answer those.
Questions for Susan on this piece? Okay, Thank you, Susan and Dan. Are we ready to move on then to long-range planning? Or did you have anything more for us? Okay. All right. Let's move on to long-range planning. Jose, Oliver, Jackie, Jenna, Matt. Anyway, take it away. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, councilors, and thank you, members of the school advisory board. I'm not sure whether Jose is going first or Jackie. So, Jackie, if you're going first, go ahead.
Should be me.
Go ahead.
Can you get the next slide? There you go. All right. So I just wanted to give you kind of a high-level overview of the buildable lands project. Under Washington State statute, we're required to update or review our our comprehensive plan once every 8 years. So the last time we updated that was in 2016. So we're required to update again in 2024. So the legislature changed that and made it 2025, but that was in the middle of our project. In 2018, they updated their guidelines for conducting buildable lands reviews, and that's looking at the sort of assumptions and methodology to determine the buildable lands. And then as part of that, we use our vacant buildable lands model to estimate current capacities by urban growth areas, so city jurisdictions and areas just outside of the cities where jurisdictions will look to annex those lands at their urban growth areas. So the project is really looking at updating sort of our methodology to be consistent with the guidelines, and also looking back to see how we've grown in the last 4 or 5 years since 2016, and compiling that and seeing if we are meeting our target densities, and whether we're going to be able to accommodate the population projections that were estimated in 2016. So it's kind of a check-in, and then we're refining the methodology, and that's really going to be the sort of the precursor for the next periodic update, like I said, that's supposed to happen in 2024. So there was a project advisory committee that we put together that we've had 8 meetings with from 2019 through January of 2021 that came up with some recommendations to update some of the methodology. And we're in the process of doing that update. We've got to go to council and planning commission with our target date still at the end of June of this year. One of the issues that's come up that sort of affects or that's related to schools is how do we account for lands that school districts need to accommodate their growth? And one of the things that was talked about is whether to do that within our vacant buildable lands model or when we do our periodic update and account for that land at that point. So what we, I think, sort of have agreed upon is to use or rely on the capital facilities plans that the school districts already come up with, and usually details the growth that you're expecting, usually in the next 6-year time frame, and accounting for the land that you already have on hand. And so our vacant buildable lands model sort of already accounts for the land that is on hand that's owned by school districts, and we exclude that from what's available for residential and employment growth. So we really want to use the capital facilities plans that you all come up with to inform how much additional land beyond what's needed for residential and employment to account for that. as part of our periodic update in the future. I think that's the quickest version I have of that. Please let me know if you have any questions.
Are there questions for Jose? I don't hear any. Thank you. Do you have more for us? Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jackie again with Clark County Community Planning. I'm here today to provide the council here an update on the county's housing option study and action plan. We've done some work so far this year and researching kind of the need, and I'll get into that more. But at the end, I can point you to our project website, which will have a ton more information and resources for those that want to get more into the details of the work that's being accomplished so far. So can we go to the next slide? So the purpose of the Housing Option Study and Action Plan is to understand our local housing challenges and identify opportunities to encourage creation of additional housing types that are affordable to a variety of incomes within the unincorporated Vancouver urban growth area. So on that map, you see there the area in dark gray. This could be done through the removal of regulatory barriers and or other strategies. So the county is focusing on this area as it is similar to a city where it is an urban area with urban services, where various types of housing like duplexes, triplexes, townhomes, condominiums, multifamilies, and single family are found compared to the rural and resource areas of our county outside of those urban areas. The county's hired a consultant team with experience in assisting local governments with similar housing efforts. And in addition, an advisory group that was appointed by county council will assist the staff and consultants with developing recommendations for consideration by the public, the planning commission, and the county council. The advisory group consists of 19 members, and they represent a broad range of interests, including those most vulnerable to rising housing costs and displacement, people working in the housing industry, parties responsible for implementing housing-related regulations, and other community stakeholders, such as schools. We have Heidi Rosenberg as the schools advocate. And she will be coordinating with and updating on the project with Vancouver and the Evergreen School Districts. We also have representation from WSU Vancouver, and we have a member that represents large employers in the area. To date, the advisory group has met 3 times with their 4th meeting scheduled next Tuesday at 3 p.m. via Zoom. There are 5 major phases of this project, which include what we call understanding the issues, which was a stakeholder interview process that happened last summer, which I'll go into a little bit more detail here in a second. The next phase is we're calling the review and analysis phase. So this includes the housing data collection and analysis that has been done on this area, along with a review of our land use policies, zoning, and regulations. Then 3rd phase is what we're calling the recommendation development phase. So once the advisory group has received the information, the background information, the data, the needs, what's happening on the ground, they'll move into developing potential strategies to present to the public and to the Planning Commission and Council for consideration, and then preparation of the action plan, which will bring all of this together. And then the legislative process, which would be whatever strategies and recommendations that are part of the final action plan through approval and review and approval to County Council. The project's currently in phase two. So that review and analysis, that kind of information gathering, and the advisory group will be soon moving into the next phase to start their strategies and recommendation development. So today we'll provide just a brief overview of this project and the information that the advisory group has heard to date. Next slide. So the first phase of the project was the understanding the issues. So last summer, the consultant team interviewed over 70 stakeholders. And you can see a table here that indicates the organization and groups that were interviewed. We also had an online questionnaire for those that weren't able to, we weren't able to interview by phone or video. We also had some focus groups including a group from the real estate community. We were able to understand the perspectives of housing in this area from these various groups. And our goal was to talk to as many people as possible that was a stakeholder in housing in this area. So after every interview, the question was always asked, who else should we speak to? And then we would go on from there and speak to whoever was recommended. So this became a document that has a list of these interviewees' perspectives on housing, so we could understand kind of the initial issues, potential opportunities, things that people were thinking about regarding housing in this study area. So the themes that kind of came across had to do with housing types, issues or challenges with zoning, the land supply, infrastructure, permitting, fees, location where housing types should go, parking, incentives for creating more affordable housing, a range of perspectives that we've been able to document in that report. So that was our first phase. Next slide. So the next phase has the data and the review of our housing needs and what's happening on the ground there in the study area. So there's a lot of information that we have that we don't have time to get into today, but kind of a snapshot here. Like communities across Portland region, the study area is at a crossroads, as probably nationally. The population has grown and is expected to continue to grow at a rapid pace. But we're not seeing enough housing, different housing types, to provide for the variety of household incomes that we have within the study area. So, like I said, there's a lot of information and data that we've compiled about the study area. It covers demographics, current housing conditions, and housing need. So what we know is that assuming these current household income trends continue, as you can see here, the economists did a snapshot between 2012 and 2019. Wages have increased 12%, rents have increased 23%, and the average home sales price per lot square footage increased by 95%. So you see the obvious disconnect there. So assuming these trends continue, there will be a continued need for housing that is affordable to people at a variety of income levels, especially the low to middle income parts of the income spectrum. So in this study area, 44% of renter households and 23% of homeowners are cost burdened or severely cost burdened, meaning they're spending more than 30% of their income on housing costs. That number doesn't take into account the transportation costs that many households also have with commutes and going to work. So without substantial change in our policies and to address housing costs, these characteristics will continue. Next slide. So another piece of the review and analysis was understanding what challenges that there may be in creating more housing for people. So we took a look at the county's housing policies, zoning, and other regulations to identify any barriers in creating more diverse housing types at different price points in the study area. Looking at, you know, do our long-range plans and policies support a variety of housing options? And are those plans and policies being implemented through the zoning code and development regulations? Looking at, are there opportunities for a variety of housing types, including single family, middle housing, and multifamily housing that meets the diverse needs and preferences of the county's population? And for those that have the middle housing term is new. So this refers to alternatives to single family detached and multi-unit apartment buildings that are in the middle, meaning in terms of the kind of the density scale and size of the units. And they usually take form with ADUs, accessory dwelling units, duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, townhomes, cottage clusters, and courtyard apartments. So they're at a scale that they are compatible with single family dwellings, and they also help support more walkable communities. So what we learned from the audit is that there are potential opportunities to make adjustments to the existing code and regulations to encourage a more diverse supply of housing. And that's what the advisory group will begin discussing and preparing potential strategies to introduce to the public and get some feedback from the public, Planning Commission, and Council. Next slide. So this is a kind of snapshot of the schedule that we have for this project. As you can see, the red box there is where we currently are. We're just completing that phase two of the review and analysis. So that data collection and the review of our county policies and regulations. And then the advisory group will be moving into the recommendation development phase. Then also coming up this spring will be our first public outreach to the community. So we will be scheduling a public event, public meeting for that. That'll be coming in May. So more details and information we'll be sharing about that. And I think that pretty much does it for that. Jenna, if you could go to the next slide to share the website. Oh, sorry. Never. We will provide actually Jenna has on the Schools Advisory Council a link to the project page. So there you'll find various links to different pages about the project, including the advisory group page that has their meetings provided there with links on how to join or watch the recording, along with all the information and reports that have been presented to them so far. And if you're interested, we have a link to sign up for project updates. So you can receive emails regarding the project if you're interested in that. So that's it for me. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions of Jackie? I don't hear any. Thank you, Jackie. Thank you.
All right. So again, I'm Jenna. I am also a planner in the community planning department, and I have been the planner who works with school districts on their capital facility plan updates most recently. And those of you in the school districts who have updates to your CFPs, that are due know of the request that you made to the county to delay the due date of when those updates would be submitted. So there is a hearing scheduled on June 1st for the council to consider a resolution regarding that request. But in preparation for this meeting and talking with the counselors here, there was an interest to hear from the school districts making that request to delay the update to CFPs, to just hear a bit more about what's going on, you know, why the request, just anything else you can share to help us, you know, better understand what's going on with the school districts and your ability or challenges and being able to forecast capacity that you need. So we'd love to hear from folks with these districts if there's anything that you could share.
And Jenna, I can certainly speak for Battleground School District. One of the things that is a complicating factor, I think, for most of the school districts in the area is the decrease in enrollment that we've experienced due to the pandemic. Just to give you an example, Battleground was nearing 13,000 students prior to the pandemic and is now below 12,000, somewhere around 11,700. So we've lost almost 1,300 students during the pandemic. Obviously, that impacts our building capacity, and it's difficult to project long term in terms of growth and need. It's interesting because, as we already learned in the beginning of the presentation, Battleground had 64 applications with 2,035 units potentially moving in, and yet none of those are showing in terms of enrollment growth. And as I've indicated already, we've experienced an enrollment loss. So I think one of the things that we would like is an opportunity to delay that so things can stabilize, and actually in presenting a CFP, there would be a clearer picture of what our school district would need and where we are going in terms of growth and such. So that just kind of gives you a broad overview of the situation.
Is there an expectation? I just want to ask a question. Is there an expectation then that enrollment will be coming back, that it will stabilize and you will have further enrollment? That's kind of what I hear. Or either that or the stability of this other number, the reduced enrollment, then you would know, is that really going to be your enrollment numbers?
I think that that's an accurate portrayal of the of our needs and the things that we have to understand. Obviously, we're all hopeful that if we get back to something that is near normal, that our student population will return. But I think you bring up a good point. At what level is it going to stabilize? Are more people going to stay out and look at other options available to them? Those are questions that we just don't know. We see as we move back towards more normal, whatever that may be at this time, we do see an increase, a slight increase in enrollment. But for instance, us here in Battleground, we're not seeing anything near a return that we may have expected or earlier time. So yes, I think that is accurate.
Thank you. Are there others who would like to speak to this, or does that encapsulate what really the reason?
I think Battleground did a nice job of articulating it. I think here in Camas, we've had, you know, similar circumstances. School districts have to report their enrollment on a monthly basis, and we've been seeing a decline on a monthly basis up until this most recent month. And what has changed is we've started to reopen, you know, with COVID. And so, you know, we're starting to see that turn, and we hope that's a continuing trend, of course. It's just very difficult to project at this time. What the future holds, certainly just even with COVID requirements, is there, you know, as we're trying to adapt to those and open our schools as quickly as possible.
Thank you.
The only other detail I would add just real quickly is I think we all were disproportionately affected by really low kindergarten numbers this year. And so we would expect those to return because we can presume that that's a product of those parents saying it's just better for us to just sit out a year. They've been called kind of the red shirt kindergarten class. So we would expect that they wouldn't hold those kids out forever, obviously. And so they would start to reemerge next fall, we believe.
I want to, if I can, this is Les Brown from Washougal. I wanted to clarify that when we talk about the enrollment decline that we're seeing, what we believe is happening is that families are, it's not that families are leaving the area, it's that they're choosing to homeschool students or they're finding other opportunities for education that is able to provide either more in-person services or services that work you know, kind of in the schedule that students and their families can support. So we don't, like, we're confident that there are the same number of students living in our district that there were a year ago. There's just about, you know, 6 or 7% of them that are not attending school this year. I really like the red shirt kindergarten idea. That is something that we definitely expect. We're going to have a bumper crop of kindergartners next year. And we think that if we're, if the council will entertain the idea of postponing this, you'll get data that is much more valid in terms of the historical trend for enrollment, because these students and their families that are sitting on the sidelines will be back engaged in school in the fall, and they'll be part of our new baseline.
Okay.
I would say also related to enrollment, but added time gives us the opportunity to actually see what type of developments are coming in and getting permitted. We had a tremendous amount of homes built in our Pleasant Valley area, but they were larger homes that didn't necessarily bring in the family, so we didn't see the increase. But then in our south eastern end, we saw a large amount of apartment complexes going in, so we had more growth in that area. So I think giving us an opportunity to have some time to see exactly what type of development is coming in will also help us with kind of projecting what type of homes are coming in, and you know what, you know, and that will drive the different types of enrollment.
Does this also affect your school impact fees? Is that basically what it does?
I think that's one element of it, but I think there's more to it than that. I think it's it certainly affects our planning abilities.
I would agree with that portion of it. I guess I just wanted to get the nexus between this delaying this and school impact fees. Is there one?
School impact fees then should stay the same until the next update and the formulas recalculated, given capacity and projected needs going forward.
So if school impact fees were calculated right now, I'm assuming they would go down. Is that correct?
They shouldn't, unless our projections go down. If we did those right now, like in Ridgefield, each month we're gaining enrollment back as more schools reopen. So we would have invalid data right now. September counts can give us more correct information. If all those kids stayed away, we would have less needed capacity in most school districts, then you could rerun the formula. But typically we haven't rerun the formula until after a new CFP is submitted and approved. at the city and county levels.
Okay, thank you. That helps. That helps me understand a little bit better. Thanks. There are others that want to speak from any of these other school districts, or have we kind of, do you believe what has been said covers essentially the reason for asking for the delay? Okay, I'm assuming the silence means it has been covered. Thank you. Okay. Did we have any more on, are we finished with this part of the long range planning, Jenna?
Or I think our last presentation is just going to be by Matt, who's going to talk about transportation.
Right. Okay. Sorry.
Projects. Yeah. Yep. So we'll
okay, we thank
move
you.
On to him. Yep.
So good morning. It's nice to be with you today. My name is Matt Herman. I'm a transportation planner for Public Works. And I'll be presenting the next three slides. So Public Works is currently prioritizing enhanced pedestrian crossings. These are currently locations that are usually midway between crossings at intersections. An example of an enhanced pedestrian crossing is on Highway 99, just south of Fred Meyer. But we're interested in hearing from the schools for prioritizing the locations of new enhanced pedestrian crossings. These new enhanced pedestrian crossings may be a part of your Safe Routes to School network, or it might be a location that you frequently hear students crossing at locations that are unsafe. Hearing your voice and hearing from you as far as where these locations go help us determine the priority for where new enhanced pedestrian crossings can take place. If you have locations that you can identify, I would encourage you to reach out to Matt Griswold, who's our transportation engineering manager. His contact information is available here on the slide at the bottom of the slide. Next slide. So additionally, now's the time when we are seeing a lot of schools either expand or new schools being put in motion. We want to take this opportunity to reach out to you to form a relationship so that we're more proactive than reactive during the planning process. Similar to what Dan Young explained before, I think we can save a lot of time both at the school district level and county level on kind of addressing these issues before an application gets turned in the formal site plan review process. So we do have staff that specifically looks at ingress, egress, frontage improvements, sidewalks, and the standards that are addressed when a school is placed. And they are available on a proactive measure to kind of detail your site layout and help you before that site is on paper. We'll get you the contact information. It's through our development engineering division. This is the division that looks at public work standards and how access functions when a development is turned in. Next slide. So additionally, with sidewalks, Clark County has renewed our emphasis on our sidewalk network. As you know, the sidewalk network is critical to the Safe Routes to School requirements, as well as adhering to ADA standards and compliance. We are taking a pragmatic approach toward prioritizing sidewalk improvements. And like most infrastructure, there's more need than there is financing available to fix everything. So we want to take this opportunity again to reach out to you to see if there's identified locations that are unsafe in your Safe Routes to School network, where pedestrian connections could be enhanced or remediated, and we can take a really detailed focus on improving our sidewalks to protect the most vulnerable residents in our community, which includes the students. That's all I have. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer any.
Are there questions of Matt? I think I know of one school district that needs help with their crossing. But I will let him speak to it. But anyway. Okay. If there are no questions or comments of Matt, we will move on.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Matt. Okay, if the long range planning portion of this is completed, are there any updates, announcements, or questions that the group has? Okay, I don't hear any. So, are there next steps? What are our next steps? Jenna, do you have anything to say about that?
Sure. I've been taking notes during the meeting. So we've got a few follow-up items from Susan and Dan that I'll make sure get communicated out to and relayed to the group with some additional information. And then I'll also make sure for those long-range planning updates that contacts and links to projects are shared out as well. Yeah, so I think those, I'll make sure those get out to the group in the as soon as possible. And otherwise, our next meeting is several months away, and you'll hear more about that as we get closer to it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jenna, and thank you all for your participation. We'll get those documents to you that were just mentioned. We'll have the hearing about the delay for the CFPs for the schools in the very near future, in the next couple weeks, I think. So if there's not anything else, I'll just, is there anything else for the good of the order? Hearing and seeing nothing, we are adjourned and we'll see you on December 2nd, 2021, Lord willing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.